and stay with us for the Keys of Life. In this enriching segment, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi presents significance into the Islamic way of living, inspired by Mafatihul Hayat, the profound work of Ayatollah Javadi Amuli. Each episode offers practical guidance rooted in spirituality and ethics, helping us live with purpose, compassion, and clarity. Coming up, it's time for Round the World with Reporters. Don't go anywhere.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the World with Reporters.
Italy's opposition five-star movement lawmaker Stefania Ascari has submitted a parliamentary question to Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani and Interior Minister Matteo Piantedosi, requesting explanations over some media reports alleging that about 1,000 Italian citizens, including those with dual Israeli passports, have joined Israel's occupation forces after October 7, 2023, and have participated in the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip. Lawmaker Ascari said on Wednesday that the Italian government has a duty to ensure respect for international humanitarian law and the principles enshrined in the UN Genocide Convention.
The allegations are extremely serious. There could even be more than 1,000 Italian citizens involved. We demand to know the extent of Italy's complicity with terrorist Israel and its genocide in Gaza. We demand answers.
This is how Israel cares about Italian soldiers. About a year ago, Israeli forces started targeting UNIFIL positions in southern Lebanon with three attacks on Italian bases. Italy's defense minister Guido Crosetto called the attack a war crime and summoned the Israeli ambassador to Rome to lodge a formal complaint. Two Italian soldiers were injured in that attack.
Terrorist Israel is in constant breach of international norms. The Israelis think that they are above the law. They are wrong. They have bombarded embassies, sovereign countries. They have attacked Iran, Qatar in the middle of the negotiations. And now several vessels were targeted by Israeli drones off the coast of Greece.
On Wednesday, a session of the Italian lower house was suspended after a group of opposition lawmakers, including Stefania Ascari, occupied the government benches demanding that a member of the executive report on the attack on the Global Sumud Flotilla in international waters overnight. The Global Sumud Flotilla, comprising around 50 civilian boats attempting to break Israel's naval blockade of Gaza and deliver humanitarian aid, came under attack in the early hours of Wednesday when, according to organizers, drones dropped explosive devices near several boats, causing no injuries.
Loro pietiscono.
Our ministers beg Israel when they should demand security measures for the Italian citizens on board the flotilla. Israel's assault on the flotilla happened in international waters, and it's an act of piracy. It's a crime. In a motion presented some time ago, we said Netanyahu must be stopped, sanctions must be imposed on Israel, and all accords with Tel Aviv must be suspended.
In the aftermath of the attack on the flotilla, the Italian government deployed a multi-purpose frigate to head towards the flotilla for possible rescue operations, focusing primarily on Italian citizens. Max Civilip, Rome.
Spain has approved urgent measures against the ongoing genocide in Gaza, standing firmly for human rights and international law. Economy Minister Carlos Cuerpo highlighted the human toll, over 65,000 killed, 165,000 wounded, and 2 million displaced. Thousands of children face malnutrition. Madrid pledges to lead international pressure on Israel, demanding accountability and pushing for a just and lasting peace.
Spain's new decree, awaiting approval by the Congress of Deputies, enforces a total arms embargo on Israel, prohibiting all defense exports and imports, as well as dual-use products and technology. It also denies transit of aircraft fuels with potential military use and bans imports from illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. Advertising of such goods and services is also forbidden. and existing or pending authorizations are revoked.
The minister called on Spain to continue leading international efforts to confront the crisis in Gaza and to ramp up pressure on the Israeli regime. As announced by the Prime Minister and highlighted at this week's UN General Assembly in New York, Madrid aims to hold Israel accountable for its ongoing attacks on Palestinian civilians.
No es el final del camino.
I want to make two proposals. First, the state of Palestine must become a full member of the United Nations, and its integration should be completed as soon as possible. Second, we must take immediate action to halt the brutality and make peace possible. Spain will implement a plan to stop the genocide in Gaza, and will continue taking courageous measures with any who wish to join. History will judge us, and its verdict will be harsh on those who committed this atrocity, and those who remained silent.
The Spanish government has become one of Europe's most outspoken critics of the Israeli regime, leading initiatives that openly reject and condemn its genocidal policies in Gaza, as well as the ongoing expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank.
Thanks to popular pressure, Spain has approved a total arms embargo on Israel. We will not allow companies or military supplies that fuel the Palestinian genocide to enter our ports or airports. We will remain firm and strengthen the law to close any loopholes.
Spain is now the first EU country to impose a full arms embargo on Israel, a move officials call both symbolic and practical. It highlights Madrid's push for human rights and peace, while raising the question of whether other European nations will follow its lead. Alberto García, Málaga.
Activists gathered in front of the Colombia mission in New York City in support of Colombian President Gustavo Petro's proposal for a UN peacekeeping force for Palestine to help bring an end to the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Waving Colombian and Palestinian flags, protesters were seen calling for the global support of the proposal while condemning the U.S.'s habit of vetoing peace strategies to end Israel's atrocities.
And we're here in front of the Colombia mission. We're supporting what they've said, that they're going to make an effective proposal to introduce this United for Peace under a special session of the General Assembly, which they could do right now. Because in the Security Council, where it's been proposed, guess what? 159 countries could say yes, but United States says no, and it all goes in the garbage.
And I thought this was a really significant event. I put the word out. Don't see too many other journalists except you guys, because you're always on the scene, really covering what's going on with the Palestine grassroots in this country. And throughout my entire life, I've been hearing all this propaganda about the responsibility to protect and that the United States has this responsibility to come in and stop genocides when they occur. And they even invent genocides so that they can topple governments. And here you have a real stone-cold live-stream genocide, which the International Federation of Genocide Scholars has affirmed, along with the United Nations itself.
On the day that the UNGA debates have kicked off, protesters are flooding the streets in front of the UN headquarters here in New York City to condemn world leaders' inaction regarding Israel's genocide in Gaza. The protesters are also demanding that the UN revoke Israel's membership for constantly violating international laws. While many have expressed how selective the preservation of international law has become, one protester ensured that the law stood by both Palestine and Iran's side.
We're breaking every international law. I don't have to tell your audience this, but that's why we're standing here in solidarity. The horror is going on every day. None of us can bear it.
This recognizing the state of Palestine, well, you know, that's all well and good, but what is that going to do to save the lives of people in Gaza or to feed the children who are starving? So we're here to say we want action, not just words. And it's especially infuriating when you do hear the words of President Trump that are so demeaning to the rest of the world, so embarrassing.
If any hope lingers of a positive outcome for Palestine at the end of the UNGA high-level week remains unclear, but one thing does not: the steadfastness of the world to ensure a free Palestine. Rachel Hamdoun, New York.
The latest Israeli assault on Sana'a has left scenes of destruction and grief. A power facility struck, and surrounding homes were reduced to rubble, with residents rushing to save survivors buried beneath the debris.
An Israeli airstrike attacked a residential neighborhood. There are no military manifestations here whatsoever. Those injured are only women, children, and elderly. Netanyahu only wants to kill innocents because his military campaign against us is a failure.
At the hospital, survivors of the strike are being treated for serious injuries.
I was walking out of my home when the strike hit us. We heard loud explosions. What can I say except may Allah destroy them? So many people fell victim. Praise be to Allah, this is all for Gaza. This is nothing compared to what they are going through in Gaza.
Another patient described being crushed under falling rubble.
When they attacked, rocks fell on top of me and broke my left side. One rock fell on me and split the back of my head open. My leg and foot were also injured, as you can see.
As Yemen reels from the latest strike, residents and the injured alike say their sacrifices are inseparable from Gaza's struggle, despite the loss of life and the destruction of civilian areas. Yemenis vow their determination will not waver.
Over the past couple of months, the Israeli airstrikes have mainly targeted civilian infrastructure and public facilities. But the Yemeni people say the attacks will not stop them from continuing to strike Tel Aviv in support of Palestine. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Tensions are running high in India's Himalayan region of Ladakh after a statehood protest in Leh turned violent, leaving at least 4 people dead and around 80 injured, including security personnel. Authorities imposed curfew in parts of Ladakh amid ongoing unrest. While tensions persisted in Leh, shops and businesses stayed shut across Kargil on Thursday.
Life in Kargil has come to a grinding halt, with the border town observing a complete shutdown to protest Wednesday's police firing and to show solidarity with the people of Leh.
The Kargil Democratic Alliance, which has long been demanding statehood and safeguards for Ladakh, called the shutdown. Authorities banned gatherings and deployed security forces to patrol empty streets to maintain law and order. People in Kargil have called for a judicial inquiry into the killing of protesters and demand action against those who gave the orders. India's Federal Home Ministry has accused activist Sonam Wangchuk of inciting violence by making provocative statements. Wangchuk ended his hunger strike on its 15th day, shortly after unrest broke out on Wednesday. In a press statement, the Home Ministry has said it is in active talks with apex body Leh and Kargil Democratic Alliance to address public concerns. The Ladakh region bordering China and Pakistan became a separate union territory in August 2019 after New Delhi scrapped Kashmir's semi-autonomous status and split the erstwhile state of Jammu and Kashmir into 2 federal territories. The ruling BJP has accused Congress of inciting violence for political gain, while Congress blames the unrest on the central government's, quote, broken promises and inaction. As the situation remains tense, all eyes are now on New Delhi with hopes for peaceful and negotiated resolution. Sidri Safi, Ladakh.
While presidents and leaders took the podium during the UNGA high-level week in New York, activists and demonstrators protested the UNGA debates as the people of Gaza continue to be ethnically cleansed by the Israeli occupation and the world remains watching. Banners condemning the UN's negligence towards preserving international law were held high among the crowd, alongside the complicity of the U.S. in the forced starvation of the Palestinian people and the sale of weapons to the occupation killing the Palestinians.
After 2 years of genocide, most of the world has come to realize that it is in fact a genocide, except the United States and Israel, of course. And the U.S. is, Trump is speaking today, which is a mockery of anything.
The protest today at the UN is mostly about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is down here and there's going to be talks about how Israel and the U.S. are going to respond, which is most likely going to lead to full annexation of the West Bank. We are also protesting the fact that multiple states or multiple countries have now recognized a Palestinian state, which, while it is one step forward, is not full liberation. You know, you can't recognize that the knife is there without fully pulling it out and healing the wound.
As world leaders gather at the UN headquarters here in New York to discuss various issues, the urgency of Gaza's situation is highlighted by protesters surrounding the building. These protesters are demanding the protection of Palestinians. They are demanding the end of the Gaza siege and the liberation of Palestine.
Demonstrators also criticize the double standards and selective protection that the international body stands for when it comes to preaching about women's rights, but Palestine is often overlooked.
What kind of values do you stand for? Like you just said, there's pregnant women, there's babies being killed, there's no access to menstrual supplies. How can you be human if you're not letting these, if not letting aid in, not stopping the occupation? It's ridiculous.
It's all of our rights. It's women's rights, it's children's rights, it's human rights, it's really planet rights. Like, we're, by not protecting one community of people, we're really not protecting any of us, because it's a chain reaction. And when you fail to protect someone, you're really failing to protect yourself. And I think they have to remember that.
More protests are planned to occur for the length of the high-level week, calling for the freedom of Palestine from occupation and the preservation of the Palestinian identity. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of our program. I am delighted to welcome with us in this episode the representative from the Loyalty to the Resistance blog, Sheikh Hassan Izzeddin. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Today we mark the first anniversary of the Israeli aggression against Lebanon. This brutal assault began 10 days of darkness. For 10 days, there were devastating strikes against the resistance, from the pagers attack to targeting locations and attacking leaders, including the top-tier leaders. This included an attack on His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah. Now, a year after this savage war, what conclusions can we draw? Have there been any results from Hezbollah's internal review regarding the outcomes of this war? What insights have emerged? What allowed the enemy to deliver such significant blows to the resistance in those initial days?
In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. There is no doubt that what has happened can be summarized in many ways. I am trying to condense as much as possible what I understand about the situation. Firstly, gaining more knowledge about the enemy reveals that this enemy, whom we thought we knew, has changed and evolved. Whether it's military doctrine, strategy, or tactics, it has transformed and has also surpassed all norms of warfare. When a war arises, it disregards all international laws, and the global community has realized that the essence of this enemy in terms of ideology, faith, and politics is that it places no value on human life or any humanitarian considerations. This is evident from what it has done in the pagers attack. These electronic devices are used by both military forces and civilians. Therefore, even those who carry these pagers are part of the civilian society, living with their families, their fathers, mothers, brothers, and children. Consequently, we did not expect that this enemy would resort to such a devilish and criminal act. This criminal entity doesn't distinguish between the military and the civilian.
If you could turn back time to before October 7th, would you have handled the situation differently and avoided everything that happened, including what was referred to as the collapse of the resistance deterrent capability in the early days of the war?
If the intent of this question is regarding the support war that aided Gaza and defended Lebanon, then we have no regrets and will not regret it. To put it simply, the Palestinian issue is a matter of the entire nation. The sanctities of Palestine are the sanctities of the whole nation as well. Additionally, the injustice that has befallen the Palestinian cause is unimaginable, involving the extermination of a people, the displacement of a people, and the expulsion of a people from their land.
Yes, but if you knew that the cost of this support would be the collapse of Hezbollah's deterrence, the assassination of His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the pagers attack, and the rest.
Because we cannot just sit back and watch the crime, genocide, and devastation on television. This is the first point. The second point is that we were fully aware that if this enemy succeeded in eliminating the resistance factions in Gaza, the next step would be Lebanon. This enemy has two grievances with Lebanon, the liberation in 2000 and the events of 2006. Therefore, we took a preemptive step to protect Lebanon and defend its people. This is also a response to all those who say that the resistance and the weapons are useless.
Regarding the resistance and its weapons being monitored from abroad, particularly some Lebanese factions claim that Hezbollah has been building its strength and power for 40 years. However, the deterrence and balance of power that it accumulated over the years collapsed in just 10 days. What do you have to say about that?
First, when we want to evaluate any topic, we should start from its journey to the moment it reaches. This means that this evaluation inherently responds to all the voices, both internal and external, that discuss the effectiveness of resistance and its weapons. In 1982, the Israeli enemy invaded Lebanon and occupied the second Arab capital. The Islamic resistance was born from the womb of occupation. There was no such thing as a double standard. This Islamic resistance arose as a reaction. The resistance began in 1982 and continued for nearly 18 years, managing to liberate Lebanese land after such a long time, a feat that neither diplomacy, international goodwill, the international community, nor Resolution 425 could achieve. It was the first Arab victory for the resistance against the Zionist enemy, an Arab victory without any privileges, conditions, or restrictions in neither security, political, military, economic, nor anything else. This was the first achievement. The second achievement is that the enemy, along with the Americans, the West, some Arabs, and some Lebanese, engaged in a global and universal war in 2006, yet they managed to endure and remain steadfast, preventing the enemy from achieving its goals. Since 2006 until 2023, we have seen a complete deterrent equation that the enemy could not overcome. So when we discuss this resistance and its weaponry, we must consider it in its entirety, from start to finish, during the period when Lebanon enjoyed prosperity, security, and stability. Ultimately, what happened was that this enemy managed to gain an advantage through technological superiority, artificial intelligence, and human security breaches. I mean, I'm aware of the capabilities I possess, which are capable of creating balance and engaging in a battle where I can achieve victory and inflict defeat on the enemy or prevent the enemy from achieving its goals. But on the other hand, the reality is that this enemy is constantly changing, meaning they are altering their combat doctrine, the methods, tactics, and strategies they employ. So our assessment may involve a certain level of misunderstanding or failure to grasp the true nature of the evaluation that should be made.
Before the incident of the pagers, the Israeli pager attack, which set a record in Zionist crimes and also demonstrated the ability to target a significant number of resistance fighters, Sheikh Naim Qasim stated that there would be an internal investigation into how this occurred. How did the enemy manage to reach every home and every resistance fighter? Have any results emerged from the investigations? What information can you share regarding this matter?
No.
Simply put, let me say that what happened confirms that there is a flaw, which is natural. Based on that, after the events that took place following the war, along with the pagers attack and other matters, and a strike on September 23, where some leaders and personnel were killed, two committees were formed. A technical evaluation committee to assess what occurred and a separate investigation committee. The investigation committee, as you know, will delve into the details and examine where the breaches occurred, where we succeeded, and where we failed. Overall, we can say that there is a breach. First of all, there is a technological gap in it. The other thing is that the enemy has also benefited from the human infiltration. Now, how deep is this infiltration? We are still working on it.
Does this mean we can say that this human infiltration exists within the structure of Hezbollah? Has it reached inside Hezbollah's framework?
Regardless of the internal structure of Hezbollah or its surrounding environment, ultimately there is a human element and a technological superiority that has led to certain outcomes. I believe that after some time, we might see results that are, let's say, if not final, then nearly final.
Will you release the reports?
Certainly, it means that first, on an internal level, we need to address what has happened, because if we don't tackle the mistakes we've made, then who will be responsible for correcting them? In reality, we're all human and everyone makes mistakes. We lose a battle, but we haven't lost the entire war.
I mean, after you reach the confirmations and the investigations prove the betrayers within the body of Hezbollah, those who assisted the enemy and were its agents, will you release this information or will it remain an internal matter?
This is related to the nature of the breach, its size, and sometimes the performance of the breach. People can sometimes exaggerate a simple issue, making it seem more significant than it is, and vice versa. This is connected to the security of the resistance in the military resistance apparatus. However, we must point out the areas of error that occurred, whether in assessment, evaluation, performance, tactics, or strategy.
Well, regarding the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, was the breach a technological or a human one?
I believe that regarding this issue, the investigation committees have not yet completed their work.
But some results are starting to appear now.
I mean, no one knows exactly what happened before the investigation committees finished their work.
The enemy claimed a year ago or during this war lasting 66 days that they had eliminated 80% of the resistance strength. Yet Netanyahu continues to boast even now that he has significantly diminished or even eradicated Hezbollah. What do you have to say about that?
We faced a strong and harsh blow, particularly at the level of core leadership, especially with the loss of His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and Sayyid Hashem Safieddine, along with military leadership and field personnel, among others. However, the resistance remains present, alive and ongoing. This indicates that the blow that did not break our back strengthens us. We faced a blow, yet our structure is healthy, and I believe the path to recovery began the moment we gathered ourselves, so to speak, and managed to restore the positions of those we lost. And also, I can say that even on this first anniversary, our brothers who were injured during the pager attack have also recovered, and in their recovery, the resistance has also healed. Additionally, the restoration of the necessary alternatives is well known to everyone. Thus, we can now say that the resistance has returned to its former strong state, able to perform its tasks, fulfill its duties, and take on its responsibilities.
You agreed to the ceasefire agreement. You stood behind the state and entrusted President Nabi Berri and the Lebanese state to implement this agreement. If you could turn back time to before the ceasefire agreement, which was sponsored by the Americans and lacked any guarantees afterward, and which Israel has exploited to continue its aggressions against Lebanon in all its regions to this day, would you have agreed to this type of ceasefire? What options did you have?
Of course, we need to put things in perspective. I mean, let's take the moment and review the time when the ceasefire was declared and what happened with Hezbollah and how the resistance continued its military and security path until the ceasefire was reached. The enemy was the one who failed to achieve its goals and requested the Americans to intervene for a ceasefire. This indicates that at the moment the resistance agreed to the ceasefire, it had the capability and the resilience to continue. Furthermore, the resistance was indeed in contact with President Nebi Berri, who was also in touch with the party's leadership. Thus, as a result of exchanging points of view and making comments on the draft, this is what happened.
No.
Do you regret agreeing to this type of agreement at the time?
The political, security, and military circumstances that existed during the negotiations, along with the manner in which they were conducted, played a significant role. We must not forget that the balance of power and its disruption influenced this situation. Therefore, the decision made was correct, and anyone in that phase, under the same conditions we faced, would likely have made the same choice. However, the fact of the matter is that the Lebanese state is the one that agreed, and the resistance committed to what it agreed to. Yet the sponsors of this agreement, who were supposed to guarantee it, failed to uphold their end, starting from the Americans to the French and even the Israelis. Consequently, when the opportunity was given to the state to fulfill its responsibilities fully on the basis of...
Do you think the state has fallen short in monitoring this situation and putting pressure on the occupation?
Of course, because from the very start moment, we noticed that the commitment was one-sided without the involvement of the other party.
Now you are being treated in Lebanon and outside Lebanon. Of course, we are talking about the various opposing groups with Hezbollah, I mean America and Israel, as if you have been defeated and therefore you must surrender your weapons. This was the government's decision on the 5th and 7th of August last year. Then there was a meeting in the government on the 5th of September and the army's plan. Today, how do you approach in Hezbollah this path that is working and is determined to disarm the resistance?
Well, there may not be much time to explain the topic of weapons and disarming the resistance exclusively. This term emerged after the Taif Agreement, which was a result of ending a nearly 15-year internal war. It happened because there was confusion regarding the weapons, meaning the disarmament of militias at that time, as the civil war had ended. They aimed to control the weapons that were considered uncontrolled and ensure they were in the hands of the state. This was accomplished, and the weapons of the resistance were also exempted. The proof of this is that in the first government after the Taif Agreement, led by President Harawi and with Prime Minister Salim Al-Hus, the ministerial statement embraced the resistance and its weapons, supporting the resistance to liberate Lebanese land.
The government that supported the resistance and its weapons has changed. Now the government of today claims that Hezbollah is among the militias and we need to disarm it. So what are your thoughts on this? What is your position? How will you realistically deal with this plan?
There's no problem, so we consider the legitimacy of resistance to be valid and present. This is one aspect of the government's decision. If this decision is based on truth and objectivity, I would call it a major sin, because it contradicts the national charter. Therefore, it has exceeded the Constitution, considering that the preamble of the Constitution is part of it, which violates the shared living in rejecting a fundamental component of this issue. Another point is that the legitimacy is supported by statistics or opinion polls, which show that 60% of the Lebanese people refuse to hand over weapons. This weapon, which I would say is legitimate and lawful, taking it away from the resistance does not have the charter or national support either. In reality, when we talk about disarming the resistance, it means stripping Lebanon of its power and ability. This weapon is for the protection of the homeland and its resources. We cannot allow this weapon to be taken away, and we have declared that it cannot be removed under any circumstances or pretext.
انتهى الوقت ولكن يعني
The time is up, but I have a question. I would like a brief answer, please. What would you do if you were faced with the army?
وبمواجهة الجيش ماذا أنتم فاعلون؟
نحن بالتأكيد حريصين على أن
We are certainly eager to avoid confrontation with the army. And the army is equally cautious. However, in the end, when faced with the choice, let's say the option to die with honor or to die in surrender, we will never raise a white flag. If it comes to that, we will undoubtedly die the death of the honorable and the free. It is an honor when a person dies for a sacred cause.
شكرا جزيلا لك سعد.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Sheikh Hassan Azzeddin, for this opportunity. Dear viewers, this brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you.
شكرا للمتابعة وإلى اللقاء.
Destroying everything, everything that's dear to me. I can never be like you. You are the wicked of this world. You are the reason why we feel fear in our daily lives.
It's not about killing, it's about life and sharing. Laugh with someone. Yes, faith is not about killing, it's about life and sharing. Life and making a difference. Yeah, making a difference. Don't involve
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وصلى الله على محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Brothers, sisters, listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. Now we are discussing the social system, and specifically we're talking about unity. And we discussed a lot of things about unity. Now the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, they have emphasized again so much on the fact that we should not divide and break up between us. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says, لا يحل لمسلم أن يحجر أخاه فوق ثلاث. A believing or a Muslim, he's being very specific, a Muslim, not a believer, because a Muslim is anybody. He says, a Muslim is not allowed to break up with his brother in faith more than 3 days. Brother or sister. And he also said, لا تباغضوا, do not hate one another. ولا تحاسدوا, do not be envious of one another. ولا تدابروا, do not give your backs to one another. وكونوا عبادا إخوانا, but be servants to Allah, brothers. You do not have the right to break up with your brother more than 3 nights. Now, obviously, first day something happened between you and someone, you got upset, and you decided to part your own ways. Sure, 1 day, 2 day. After 2 days, you should have at least cooled down a bit and thought about it a bit. Okay, fine, we had this and this happened, but let's make up. After 3 days, you're putting yourself in trouble with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we, if you guys remember in a previous episode, we said that even if the other person refuses to do anything and say anything, you be the first to go and break the ice. And you go say, look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, this, that. Whether he accepts or not, that's a different issue. But if you be the first to come and try to break the ice, the hadith we read before said, will be the first, whoever comes first, will be the first to enter paradise. So I have to be very mindful of that. Now, what happens when we keep our hatred to each other and we keep dividing and staying away from each other? Well, obviously, there are a lot of effects. One of the effects that we will do when we keep fighting one another and we separate and we, you know, part from one another, shaitan is going to be really happy. We mentioned a hadith before about this. And this hadith from Imam Sadiq salamullah alayhi, he says, لا يزال إبليس فرحاً مهتجر المسلمان. Iblis and shaitan will always be in a state of happiness as long as he sees two brothers or two sisters in faith broken up. Now, I'm not sure about you, but the last thing I would want to ever do is to make shaitan happy. He made our lives really hard. And the least we can do is pay the favor back. So, don't make him happy. If someone breaks up with you or you have an issue with someone, just say for the sake of making shaitan miserable, I'm not going to break up with you, brother. And if you do break up with him, go make it up with him and take shaitan in your face. Imam Baqir salamullah alayhi in hadith, he says, إن الشيطان يغري بين المؤمنين. Oh, shaitan also comes and tries to spread whispers and rumors between the believers. ما لم يرجع أحدهم عن ذنبه. When one of them does not decide to go back on his own sin. Obviously, when there's a problem, one of us is mistaken. And whoever is mistaken, the best thing to do is to say, look, yeah, I didn't make a mistake. فَإِذَا فَعَلُوا ذَلِكَ اسْتَلْقَى عَلَى قَفَاهُ وَقَالَ فُسْتُ. When he sees that these people do not come together, he will fall down on his back, which means like he will sleep on his back, recline, relax, and he will say, I am successful. Now, seriously, do you want the shaitan to have that dopamine rush in his brain and feeling happy that he managed to keep us apart? No, I don't think you would want to do that, nor do I. So if you have a person that you had something wrong that went between you guys, go and fix it. Don't make shaitan happy. Let us take a short break and then we will come back. Oh.
آیت الله جوادی آملی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, the keys of life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه, چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book مفاتیح ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است, چه فرون دماغ و ثواب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره, دعا هم داره, ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. So, we said one of the things that will happen when we divide is that shaitan is going to be happy. Number two, being divided actually will take a person out of Islam and the guardianship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Big title, right? Obviously, don't take my word for it. Let's see what the Ahl Bayt have to say. Imam As-Sadiq salamullah alayhi says, "An abihi an jaddah," from his father, from his grandfather, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He said, "Ayyuma muslimaini tahajara," whenever two Muslims break up with one another, "tahajara," and they go their own path, "famakatha thalathan," and they stay for 3 days, "la yastalihan," they do not come and fix up with each other. Illa kana kharijain min al-Islam. Both of them are out of Islam. Now you could say, but he done this by me. Yeah, sure, but he's your brother in faith. You could make up with him. But since he didn't, because obviously, if you remember, we spoke about forgiveness and trying to make up and create, you know, unity in society. Since he did not do it, then obviously what happens is that both of you cope the same punishment. Me and whoever I broke up with, both of us are considered to be outside Islam. وَلَمْ يَكُنْ بَيْنَهُمَا وِلَايَةً, when there is nothing that connects them. What connects me and you is our faith, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When we divide, that connection goes out of the door. So we're no longer Muslims, we are no longer have anything in common. Now, you might be asking a question. Well, sounds fair, but there are a lot of people, really bad people, that we knew, but then we had to break up with. Now, don't mix things. See, the Ahlul Bayt Salamullah Alayhi, many times they have told us, like, stay away from the liar, stay away from the hypocrite, stay away from the namam, stay away from number of people we are meant to stay away from, because they are just bad people. But here we're talking about my brother in faith who was good and everything else, but then we had a problem. Then we had a fallout, whether it's got to do with money, family issues, I don't know, silly things. To me it's silly, maybe to you it's not silly. We you know, we have like issues regarding stupid things. And you say, okay, well, he's bad. No, well, he's not bad. Maybe he just, you know, he done wrong by you. But as a person, he's a good person. Generally speaking, he's a good person. Maybe you and him didn't get along in one thing. That's who we're talking about. Sometimes I know people who are in my life circle, who were even at some point of my life, they were considered friend or friends. But later on, I do realize that these people are bad people. Then I outcast myself. I separate myself from them.
because they are literally bad people. But not I'm talking about my friend who, for example, he said something to me, I felt, you know, unsettled, or he done something and I felt unsettled, and then I said, you know what, okay, fine, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Or leave me alone, don't talk to me anymore. I block you, you block me. That's what I'm talking about. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi says, if you guys do that, then both of you leave Islam altogether. Very scary, guys. Very, very scary. Inshallah, we'll continue this topic in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into your trusted companion on the airwaves, Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. We're grateful you've chosen to spend part of your day with us. First up, it's time for news. Following the news, join us for Foresight. This program explores the practical dimensions of worship and servitude to Allah in confronting the challenges of modern life. Featuring lectures and speeches by renowned English-speaking scholars from the Islamic world, Foresight focuses on deepening understanding of devotion to God as a guiding principle for contemporary issues. Afterwards, we return with another segment of radio production. Coming up next, news. Please stay tuned. Challenge of Safa and Marwa rekindles my mind. Oh, oh Allah, I've been waiting for the call. I pray for the day when I can be near the God who wants. Oh, oh Allah.
challenge of suffer in my world rekindles my mind.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens more civilians are killed in Gaza as the Israeli military pushes ahead with its genocidal war against Palestinians in the besieged territory. And Caracas accuses the US of seeking to topple the legitimate government of Venezuela through its military buildup in the Caribbean Sea. And this is news. Iran has recalled its ambassadors from the UK, France and Germany for consultations after their move to reinstate UN sanctions against the country over its nuclear energy program. Iran's foreign ministry said the move was a response to the European Troika's irresponsible decision to trigger the snapback mechanism. The UN Security Council on Friday failed to pass a draft resolution that would have delayed the reinstatement of the sanctions. The proposal was brought forward.